The Guardian.
Sharon, it's been 2.5 years since you were removed by the former Children's Secretary, Ed Balls, and then subsequently sacked by your former employers, Haringey Council. How does it feel now to be vindicated?
Well, I'm very, very relieved. Relieved to read the judgment. But I always have a sense of where this started was with the, you know, very tragic death of a child. So there's not a great joy in that sense, because the whole story is a very sad one. So whilst I say I'm relieved and I'm pleased and I read the judgment, today's judgment, and it describes to me what I was experiencing. So the words that are used in that judgment of being set up as a scapegoat is what I was experiencing during that dreadful 2 weeks. So in some sense, I'm very relieved to see that that's been recognised, but always with that sadness of the death of a child at the heart of the story.
Clearly, the judgment was very critical of Ed Balls during that period when he was Secretary of State for Children. What are your feelings when you read the court ruling on Ed Balls' actions?
It's absolutely what my view is as to how I was treated. Ed Balls and his officials knew all about the death of baby Peter, and I expected a steadying hand when the news broke, and indeed they knew when it was going to break, and I expected the government to come with a steadying hand. And I'm still staggered by how irresponsible the Secretary of State was. He almost demonstrated his lack of knowledge and understanding of children's social care, loud and clear. And I think that's how so many people felt about it. This was his department, yet he took steps that led it into complete disarray, not quite knowing how to respond to it as social workers. I think he was very, very irresponsible and demonstrated that lack of knowledge and understanding.
2 years ago, you came to The Guardian and did an interview where you said at the time that you felt that Balls' actions had created a local tragedy that would lead to a national catastrophe for social work generally. Do you feel that those comments have been borne out by what has happened, not just in Haringey, but across Britain since?
At one level, haven't been surprised, because between the death of Peter and the whole news becoming public, I felt I was responding very responsibly, and my deputy was responding responsibly to hold things steady. So I wasn't surprised at what was going to happen once the whole case had been dealt with the way it was. And if I tell you that we now have more children in care today than ever in the country's history, there are more children in care today. There are almost 10,000 more children subject to a child protection plan today than there were in 2008. Now, they're staggering statistics, but they need not a headline, but a more serious reflection, because there are some people who would feel that we've now got it right, yeah. And that this greater number of children are now being protected, and that's one position on it. And Bernardo's would very much want to go in that direction, and I think that's a debate very much worthy that the sector should have that debate. But alongside it, it's happened at a time. Well, it's happened in a more haphazard way than we might have wanted, but it's also happened at a time when, if it happens to be the right way to go, we haven't got the money to sustain it. So we've got ourselves a very complex problem.
Do you think it's become harder for social workers and people who do your old job to work effectively in the climate that was in part created by your treatment?
Yes, certainly that is the case. I mean, large numbers of social workers left Haringey, for example, which was just a tragedy, and I was really very grieved about that. But you have to go back a bit further and look at some of the recommendations that had come before, recommendations out of the Laming inquiry, and some of those led to a very bureaucratic process, yeah? The performance indicators, the systems that social workers had to use. And it was interesting when I Professor Munro talks about those, and indeed she's very clear in her report, and I very much welcome it, that this was just top-heavy. It was diverting social workers from, you know, using their professionalism to, you know, to do their work. And when I raised some of these points during the Ofsted inspection, because as a director of education, when I became a DCS and saw all these social workers who were having to spend large amounts of time in the office, it was one of my very first questions, why are they all here? Because I would not expect anyone who was an education advisor to be in the building, you know, get out and into school. But here they all were. And of course, when I sat down with them, began to look at what they were doing, I began to realise just how top-heavy all this IT system, all these IT systems were. And of course, when I raised some of these points with Ofsted, I was astounded when we got the record of evidence for the Ofsted inspection, because when I raised these points, of course, Ofsted have to, you know, label everything with a grade. And I was graded one, you know, inadequate. And I look at that now in the record of evidence and think it's just crazy, the position we'd all got ourselves to. And so I think social workers were very diverted from the real task. And I think Munro is hopefully going to help us back there.
The ruling was very clear that it considered the actions of Balls and Haringey to be unfair. Presumably that accords with what you felt at the time.
Oh, absolutely. It was crystal clear to me right from the start that the steadying hand I was expecting was certainly not going to be, particularly not when the news broke, particularly after the spat in the Commons between the then leader of the opposition and the then Prime Minister.
That's David,
David Cameron and Gordon Brown. And it became clear to me as the days rolled on that, you know, Ed Balls was the first lieutenant and he was out there and he was going to, you know, deliver the outcome that he thought was going to solve the problem. And as I've gone through the legal proceedings, of course, I've learned more things, because during that period, of course, I was very busy. I was working. And my chief concern was risk to children, risk that some of these staff who were under stress would make the wrong decision and we would have another catastrophe. So I was very focused on that. So a lot of the things that happened, I learned much later. So I didn't see the photographs of Ed Balls with the Sun editor for probably over a year. And I didn't realise that he'd met with other people to give away my job, you know, relatively a long time before the inspection report was finished, because it only took 4 days that they were in contact with me, but he was giving my job away. And but during that process, I knew I was being scapegoated.
So that was a relatively short period. Then
yes.
It was 3 weeks in November 2008. And so what you're saying is during that period, you weren't really aware of what was happening to you until essentially you switched on your TV on that Monday morning to watch the press conference, which Ed Balls was holding to deliver his reports or Ofsted's reports. And that's when you first heard that you'd been dismissed.
Oh, yes, that's the first time. I suppose I've learned a lot now. I believed in some level of integrity. It didn't cross my mind that something so outrageous could even be possible. And of course, when the inspectors left me, they were still talking about a first report, an interim report. That seems reasonable to me. I was absolutely fine to work with those inspectors and cooperate with them. And they went away on that basis. I was told by their quality assurance person there would be no mention, no identification of any individual. And of course, I know that that's how the reports work, but that's not what happened. So I was absolutely shocked, so much so, I probably didn't move out of the chair for about 3 days. I did go to bed, but I sort of come back and sat in that chair. I was totally stunned. Utterly stunned at what on earth had gone on. And of course, when I read the report, I question the evidence, and I question the evidence to this day. And it hasn't been questioned in court. The evidence of the Ofsted inspection was not the focus of that court case.
During that 3-week period, and for many months afterwards, it was clear that your life had been very difficult through being the centre of what seems now absurd media attention. You were all over the tabloids every day. You'd have photographers stalking you, newspapermen outside your front door. Has that changed to some extent now? Are you living a slightly different life now?
Yes, I mean, that's subsided. Even as late as, a couple of weeks ago, there would be people around. And I still have, you described that, but there were things like death threats. There were worries about possibly an arson attack. Yeah. No, there were things like, to this day, I've got a wire cage screwed to the back of my door, lined, in foil, which would hold a fire if something burning come through. So I'm still living in that situation. During that period, it was just very frightening. And I've managed to stop having these sort of attacks of shakes when people in the street, I think sometimes people still recognise me. That still happens, which is a bit unnerving because you don't know quite where they're coming from. And I must say, most people who've approached me in public has been to support me. But before they get and speak to me, I've already almost started to panic. And I've got all sorts of lasting effects. So if someone's I can hear someone running behind me, and it's just a jogger, as they're running, I get the whole physiological, rush that it's a photographer. So there's all sorts of things that sort of stay on with me. But I hope that some of that will go with this outcome. Let's see.
And clearly it was a very stressful time for you in terms of your health. Do you feel you've come through that now?
Yeah, I mean, I did have a very dodgy time when I was actually frightened to be left on my own because I didn't trust myself. But I did come through that, and I was able to be very open with my daughters about that and how I felt, and that was very sensible, and to make them aware. I had to work very hard to just regain some kind of composure. And I had a few attacks of shingles, which, kind of be expected. But that has settled down. And then you begin to put things in proportion, don't you? We all know people who are terminally ill, and my own sister died of a terminal illness. So, you begin to put things in perspective and the importance of, carrying on and picking yourself up and being sensible. So I worked hard at that, and I got into physical activity, It doesn't cost anything to get out there and walk. And, so I really focused hard on health and the value of health. And that was very important. Yeah.
I think for a lot of people at the time, this was this seemed to be a question of accountability, and that you were the director of Children's Services. This terrible tragedy had happened. Therefore, the buck should stop with you. Do you feel that in any way that those expectations were wrong? Do you feel in any way that somehow you were? There was a responsibility that...
I've gone over and over and over that one, as you can imagine. And, I've spoken to you before about, that sort of feeling when you first heard that news, that horror. And, I was very pleased that the judgment today says, accountability is not the same as heads will roll. And I felt, and I do question myself on this all of the time, because I have to make sense of it all, of what happened and how did people see this. I felt I was being responsible. So the first thing I did was make sure I was in the room when all of the review took place. And of course, that was heavily criticised. To make sure I knew it firsthand what our being the social care responsibilities were, what action needed to be taken, what kind of report needed to be, everything that happened needed to be there. And I can still say, hand on heart, that first serious case review was a thorough piece of work done in a proper way. It sets out a large number of recommendations for every agency. It was then, of course, deemed inadequate. and its successor, the second serious case review, is deemed good, but has no recommendation for police or health. And indeed, their conduct in the case virtually disappears. So I really have to question what that's about and how Ofsted could have evaluated them in that way. And, you know, anyone who's interested in the intricacies of this can get the documents and look at them. And to me, it's very, very clear.
Are there any, when you look back at the case, going all the way back to August 2007, when Peter Connolly was killed, are there any regrets that you have at all?
I've been asked this one before, and I find it a struggle with it. Regrets are a strange kind of concept anyway, aren't they? You know, there's sort of this hindsight and all of that. And I go through everything. And I mean, I can look at the number of times I was, because DCSs are headhunted all the time. I had a very good track record. I still have a good track record is still there. It's not wiped away. I was headhunted a lot for other jobs. And people out there will know that because they rang me. And I look back on that and think, I was a fool. Why didn't I just go? And I didn't.
On the grounds that if you'd had gone before all this blew up, then...
Yeah, it might have been different. I might have been happily working somewhere else. Maybe everyone could have said, oh, well, we've changed, we've got new people now. But nobody in Haringey wanted that to happen. You know, all of that was open and on the table. Nobody wanted that. We could see what the conduct was of our social workers. And I still maintain they should never have been sacked. Never have been sacked. And I will keep saying that. And I will be out there supporting them in their cases, which aren't yet concluded.
Now, you've been through the courts with this now, through a judicial process, a legal process for 2 years now. Is it all at an end?
No, there are some legal aspects still to go because there is a right of appeal. People have a right to a fair hearing, yeah? Something I didn't get. So there is a right of appeal to the Secretary of State and to Haringey Council. So that process is there. But they would have to appeal now. Their appeal to the appeal court was turned down this morning. I believe I'm right in the technicality of that. It was turned down this morning, which means they would have to go to the Supreme Court now to seek an appeal. So in that sense, yes, there is a step to go. For me, you know, I'd say I was never wanting any of this to happen. There's nothing would please me more than to, you know, how many people have said this when events happen in their lives, you know, turn the clock back and go back to where you were. There's nothing would please me more if suddenly by some magic I could be back doing my job. And I know that can't happen. I was never in it for money. I'm never in it for any, you know, people will want to put noughts and all the rest of it. And I'm sure some of the newspapers will run with that. I was never in it for money. I've never discussed money with my lawyers. I wanted to win the case. I wanted the truth to be told. And people say to me, oh, you know, you're so strong. Where do you get all of this from? I'm not any different from anybody else. Because when you know you've been wronged, and you see this with people who, you know, any person, ordinary people, I'm an ordinary person, and you know you've been wronged, you will find the strength to keep at it and keep at it and keep at it. And you see this, well, we know some of the, you know, famous stories, you know, people who would get parole in prison if they would own up to guilt, but they know they're not guilty and so they don't get their parole. You know, you are strong because you know what happened. And I always knew what was going on, that I was being set up for this. And many, many, many people feel quite distraught about that, quite guilty about that, quite upset about that. Some people will express that to me and other people just bury it. But many of the players in this case know what went on.
Was there anything that surprised you in the fierceness of the political response to what happened in Haringey and to you personally? And has this changed your view at all of politicians?
It's a yes, it did, and no, it didn't answer. You know, it is, you sort of look at it and think, wow, that was stooping very, very low. That was really very, very low. I mean, we've seen the expenses, we've seen all those issues. To me, this was stooping incredibly low. And I suppose I was really quite shocked at that. And the only way, I suppose, it wasn't going to be exposed was that if I didn't bring action, you know, because it just would have drifted away, wouldn't it? But when I look at it now, I suppose I am shocked at just how brutal it was, because, I mean, I do understand the public, you know, how the public felt. Very much so. I try to look at it as if I didn't know any of it and look at what they were presented with. And I was doing that sort of 6 months later and a year later. You know, those clothes that Peter Connolly was wearing, the image, you know, the image of his body with it. I mean, they were just so horrific. I'd never seen any of that before at all. And also the lies that they were told. They were told many, many lies by some elements of the media. I mean, including one broadcaster who stood outside the Civic Centre and was determined to told people that I was waving graphs about. Instead of wanting to apologise to the father, I waved graphs about. No such thing ever happened. The petition that the Sun readers were signing up to said that, you know, social workers had visited 60 times and saw a child, an abused child, and that didn't happen. But if I'd have been on the receiving end of that, I could have signed that petition too. So I've got some sense of how the public may have felt, which is why I said at the beginning, you know, we needed a steadying hand on this, not a moral panic, which is what we got, a real moral panic. And I think a lot of people must have been quite distressed, actually, during that period about learning that this news about this baby. They must have been distressed. But then you get a Secretary of State who wants to say, you know, we'll get rid of this person and all will be well and we'll stop this happening again. When actually 54 more children had died in the same year as Peter Connolly and have continued to die. You know, those are the twists and turns of it, which it became layers and layers of lies and then people responding to that, which is why in many ways I didn't say very much. And I think a lot of that story still needs to come out. And I think it won't go away until there's a proper explanation. I mean, public inquiries are not, they haven't delivered well in children's social care over, you know, what have we had, 75 inquiries in something like 40 years. They don't deliver. But actually, because this story was so much in the minds of the public, I think there is a case to actually tell this story, honestly, about what happened to this child. I thought it might have happened with the inquest, but there wasn't an inquest. So I still think there's a need to really, really set this down in a truthful way. So, yes, the politics did shock me. Haringey and the politicians in Haringey and the leader of the council really, really, really struggled with this as to how to handle it, how to cope with it, how to come to terms with it, how to be responsible for what happened by understanding it and doing what was necessary. But I felt to cut down a leader who had given, I think, more than 40 years of amazing public service with a passion for the place was just...
That was George Meehan.
Yes, was just tragic. And you know, similarly, Councillor Liz Santry. But I emphasise, you know, Councillor Meehan because of his big contribution there. And it was almost as if here was their own government cutting them down. And yes, that's brutal. But I guess I have to say to you, that is the reality. That is what happens.
Last question now. What next for Sharon Shoesmith? Technically, I understand that you are now, as of today, an employee again of Haringey Council, but clearly it's going to be difficult for them to to give you a job.
Yeah.
What happens now for you?
Well, we have to have a proper negotiation with Haringey, because, yes, I'm an employee of Haringey. I can't go back to my job. I'm not making an issue of that. I'm accepting of that, that the organisation has moved on, and I'm accepting. So we need to go into a negotiation with them before, you know, we can get a conclusion for me and for them. I am still a lot of commitment to children. Their children have been my life. I would love to go back to some aspect of working with children. I started to train as a psychotherapist. I've done two years of it, and I've put that on hold, awaiting this, so that I can take my next part of my training focused on children. I'm very committed to the place of counselling and counselling support within the education system. So I'd quite like to pursue that. At the same time, I'm doing a PhD at Birkbeck University. So I've entered into a kind of academic world, which I'm just about adjusting to. But my heart is with the job I was doing.
Do you think that the ruling today will, in a sense, clear your name, which is a very distinctive name, and I think it was clear that could be your name, could be something that holds you back. But does this change things now, that people, are you hoping that this will open?
I hope it will. My mother, who's 91, keeps using that phrase. Will you have your name cleared, Sharon? And I want to say, well, it's a strange concept, isn't it? Having your name cleared. I don't think it'll ever be. For me, I knew I couldn't really live the rest of my life being associated with a brutal murder of a little child. I could not do that. And I would have pursued this legal action as far as it took to put that right. I couldn't live my life like that.